Global South Pole, a program presented to you by Sputnik Africa. Greetings, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Global South Pole podcast. I am your host, Aliyu Bello, and I am thrilled to have you join me on this episode. Today, we set our sights on the continent of Africa, where a remarkable trend is emerging in military relations. But before we proceed with our analysis on this topic, with me today, I have Dr. Tolit Charles Atia from Kampala. Together, we will discuss an event that is making headlines globally, an interview by the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov with Sputnik in the Russian capital. In an exclusive interview with Sputnik and two other media outlets, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov offered insights into important issues globally. He discussed Western sanctions imposed on Russia, stating that they have failed to achieve their goals. The top diplomat also addressed the ongoing special military operation and elaborated on Russia's position regarding potential peace talks with Ukraine. Regarding the Middle East, he commented on recent developments, including tensions between Israel and Iran. Additionally, Lavrov spoke about multipolarity, emphasizing Russia's commitment to sovereignty, security, and cooperation. He also argued for a more balanced global order not dominated by the United States. Overall, the interview provided Russia's position on these important international affairs and foreign policy matters. Dr. Tolit Charles Atia, thank you for being here with us. Let me begin by asking you to introduce yourself to our listeners.
I'm Dr. Tolit Charles Atia. I am the lead research associate at Nkumba University School of Security Studies and Analysis. I am also researcher in the geopolitical region, Eastern Africa and the Horn, majorly on security, defense, and politics.
Thank you. So, Dr. Atia, my first question to you starts with a quote by the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, where he said it makes no sense for Russia to attack European countries. Is the West cunning plan to get money from their parliaments to continue the war in Ukraine? Lavrov said on the fear of European countries that Russia will attack. So my question is, why do you think that the EU politicians latched on this narrative?
Thank you very much for that question. I really think that it would serve all of us to particularly take note that the world or the global political dispensation has tremendously shifted. We are no longer in what then we knew as the competition of the superpowers, right from the break of Berlin and then the challenges that the USSR went through, and later the monopoly of the United States of America, as well as Europe. And today, the rise of China, the rise of India, Brazil, ushers us into what you'd look at as a multilateral, you know, dispensation of politics. So it is no longer this kind of rehearsed situation where before you did anything, probably you have to call the EU or you have to call friends in America. I think the approach to global politics and security has taken a multifaceted dimension that it's almost very difficult to singularly assert yourself. So, and I think the EU, the Americas need to accept, certainly need to accept that Russia has come out of the doldrums, dusted itself, and is a force to reckon with. I definitely think Russia is very bent on making a statement in world politics today, and nobody is going to deny them that say.
I see. So let's talk about BRICS. The main challenge for BRICS is to ensure a smooth entry of new recruits. The number of new members has increased, Among the new members, there are two African countries. Nigeria has also expressed interest. So why does BRICS attract African countries in the context of emerging new world order today?
Of course, I will tell you that the appetite among African nation states, particularly to the approach of democracy, as preached by USA or as preached by the European Union, I think is no longer as attractive. You see, way back in the monolithic situation that we had predominantly, like I said before, you'd have to look up to America before you take certain decisions. But now, with China, with Russia, with India, and particularly now the BRICS, because the conversation is changing and we need to accept, because there are challenges. There have been challenges with the old order, if, you know, for lack of a better word, if you like me to say that, because there are a lot of unresolved issues in the WTO. There are a lot of unresolved issues within the UN Council of Security architecture. And I think many of these third world countries, particularly the countries south of the Sahara, are beginning to seek new allies. I'll tell you something, one of the things that probably is most attractive for them. Many of these countries are faced with a challenge that is almost common to all of them. One of them is that they're looking for money. They are looking for new money to try and build infrastructure for their people. They are looking for money to stabilize their always troubled fiscal policy agendas. They are looking for money to fund their security. And it is increasingly difficult, and they have been having difficult conversations, particularly with the old allies, that is USA and probably European Union. There is money from China. There is money from within the Eastern Bloc and movement, where there are not many questions. China is willing to dole out money without much stringent measures. It's willing to dole out money without interfering with internal politics, so to speak. So this becomes attractive. So the current formation of the BRICS is, in my view, probably another move to the left, if you like.
Thank you, Dr. Tolis Charles Atia, for your time and expertise. It was great speaking to you. Moving on to our main discussion of the day, Western nations have held significant influence on African militaries over the past decades. But this is gradually fading as Russia, which has historically been a partner of African nations, is making a comeback after a period of absence, seeking to establish its presence back in the region. For decades, African nations maintained close military ties with Western powers, primarily former colonial powers. However, their partnership has not been without controversy. Some African nations perceive a patronizing attitude from Western powers, coupled with strings attached to weapon sales, inflated prices, poor quality weapons, and unfulfilled aid packages. On the other hand, Russia offers African states an alternative path, the one that appears to be free of colonial obligations and conditional military terms. This shift is amplified by Moscow's image as a major arms supplier, which offers a wider range of weapons at lower prices than its Western counterparts. There is also a growing perception that Russia may be more understanding of African internal security concerns due to the successes they have achieved in the special military operation in Ukraine and counter-terrorism campaigns, notably against Western-backed terrorist organizations in Syria and other regions of the world. While Western powers prioritize exploitative counter-terrorism initiatives with little or no success, Moscow seems more willing to engage in a broader military cooperation, including training and equipment for internal forces. For some African nations seeking to maintain stability, this can be a particularly attractive choice. Joining me today from Abuja is retired Air Vice Marshal Olatokunbo Adesanya. Together, we will discuss the factors influencing Africa's growing interest in Russia as a military partner. Is this a move to diversify alliances, a growing dissatisfaction with traditional partnerships, or a combination of both? Stay tuned to Global South Pole to find out. Thank you for being with us. Can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
I am retired Air Vice Marshal Olatokunbo Adesanya, one-time Nigeria's defense attaché to Russia, covering about 8 other countries. I'm an aircraft engineer by profession and retired from the service of the Nigerian Air Force last year after a meritorious service.
It's a pleasure to have you with us today. I'm going to start by asking you, given your experience as a former defense attaché, what specific factors are influencing Nigeria's relationship with Russia in the military sphere?
I'd like to start by thanking you for inviting me for this interview. I consider it a privilege. And let me also quickly add that every view that I'll express in the course of this interview will not represent those of the federal government of Nigeria or any other organization, either in the past or at the moment. So now to the factors influencing military relations with Russia. Well, as you most likely will know, Nigeria operates a non-aligned policy, as in terms of its foreign policy, and as a result, this leaves the possibility for Nigeria to relate with all countries in the projection of its national interest. There's virtually no nation that doesn't rely on others for one form of military expertise or the other. And Nigeria is no exception. Nigeria's level of technological advancement is not where it should be, given Nigeria's status. So, Nigeria requires the military goods and services of Russia in some aspects of its military procurements, especially where Russia is seen to have an advantage. Of course, we all know that Russia has a well-developed military-industrial complex that could be helpful in the achievement of Nigeria's aspirations to further develop its own military-industrial complex. And of course, you will recall the support that the defunct Soviet Union gave to Nigeria during the Nigerian Civil War of the late 1960s. These are some of the factors responsible for Nigeria's military relations with Russia, as its aspiration towards improvement of its own military technological base, in recognition of Russia's military prowess. However, I must add that to some extent, language barrier has posed a form of limitation in enhancing such relations, especially when it comes to military training exchange programs.
Let's talk about recent events. There has been increased military cooperation between Russia and Nigeria, as well as other African countries such as Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, to mention a few. Can you elaborate on this growing engagement? What are the benefits of this engagement for African countries?
It is true that there has been an upsurge in military cooperation between Russia and many African countries, of which Nigeria is no exception. I agree with you on that. This upward trajectory is particularly noticeable in the high number of military cooperation and military technical cooperation agreements that have been signed between Russia and African countries in recent times. While I was in Moscow as Nigeria's defense attaché, at the time, I observed that over 20 military cooperation and military technical cooperation agreements were signed between Russia and African countries within a five-year period. I particularly recall the signing of a military technical cooperation agreement with Nigeria while I was the DA. That took place in August 2021. There have also been reported deployment of Russian military specialists to some African countries to assist in the maintenance, modernization, and operation of Russian or Soviet-era military equipment. Quite noticeably, several defense deals have also taken place between Russia and many African countries. We have these deals, which are mostly in the forms of contracts for the supply of the MI series of helicopters, Russian-made fighter jets, armored battle tanks, especially the T series, armored recce vehicles, then I think some assault boats too, among others. And one interesting thing is that one or two of these contracts reportedly even made provision for transfer of technology to the concerned African countries. So in addition to all this, you know, of recent, there have been increasing the number of joint and combined military exercises between Russian and selected African countries. Further to this is the port call visits made by the Russian Navy to the navies of some African countries. This shows increasing friendship and collaboration between the respective navies. So, of course, in recent times, too, there have been quite a number of high-level military visits, service chiefs from African countries visiting Russia, and ministers of defense of African countries visiting Russian Ministry of Defense. So all these and more naturally have impacted on the military capability of the armed forces of the concerned African countries. This is especially in terms of fighting power, military technological base, and of course, skills enhancement for personnel.
There are various formats of military technical cooperation countries can engage in. In your experience as a former defense attaché at the Nigerian Embassy in Moscow, in which aspects of such cooperation have relations between Russia and African countries been most successful?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I think clearly that the aspect of military technical cooperation with Russia that most African countries have benefited from includes the supply and even on many occasions, donation of needed weapons, munitions, spares for aircrafts and tanks, as well as training of personnel to operate and to maintain the various military equipment.
It is interesting to know that Russia has been working with African countries in different spheres of military cooperation, and this has enhanced their capabilities in the fight against insurgency and overall improved their military capabilities. So moving further, Russian military hardware and technology have been described by so many experts around the world as proven and trustworthy, especially if we look at their successful application in Ukraine, where we have seen them outperform Western weapons. In your opinion, can this be linked to the growing interest of African countries in forging closer ties with Russia?
There's no doubt that Russian military hardware have, over the course of time, proved reliable and trustworthy. But the reality is that the issue of comparison will always be subjective and will always be contextual. I would therefore not like to further comment on that. Nevertheless, I also do not think that there is a direct relationship between the reliability of Russian military hardware in Ukraine and the growing interest of some African countries to forge deeper military relations with Russia. Recall that I earlier said that there has been a gradual upswing in the military relations between African countries and Russia. And this has been from as far back as about 2015 or thereabout, long before the war in Ukraine. So I think those other factors I mentioned earlier have been more responsible for the increase in these relations with African militaries.
We've been talking about the undeniable increase in military partnership between Russia and Africa. What factors have contributed to the growing shift in African military relations towards Russia?
You know that leaders of sovereign nations will always want the best for their countries. Ideally, the focus of every nation is to achieve its strategic objectives rather than focus on the objectives of other countries, no matter how friendly. As it is popularly said, in international relations, There are permanent interests, but not permanent friends. So without being in a position to hold brief for African countries, I would want to believe that emerging African leaders are simply pursuing relations considered best for their respective countries. One thing is clear, though. Russia has in recent times apparently made deliberate overtures to African countries, clearly projecting itself as a true and equal friend in need. That has also been an important factor.
How does Russia's approach to military cooperation with African nations differ from that of other major powers such as the United States, the UK, and France?
What I'll say is that the revived relationship between Russia and African countries is generally not in the Soviet era patronage style, but rather in a manner of partnership that is aimed at expanding trade and economic buoyancy. So the focus appears to be more about expanding geopolitical influence as opposed to spreading communism. Furthermore, Russia appears to be seeking support for its vision of a multipolar world as opposed to a unipolar and bipolar world. So I'll say that judging from the contents of military technical cooperation agreement between Russia and some African countries, Russia's approach to military cooperation with African countries tend to be offering equal partnerships with African countries, as opposed to a seeming neocolonial relationship, which no sovereign country really wants.
I agree with you on that. No country wants a neocolonial relationship, as this brings about inequality, undermines sovereignty and true democracy. Whereas promoting mutually beneficial trade and embracing multipolarity fosters equitable partnerships and empowers nations to shape their destinies collaboratively. So my next question to you is, could the increase in military technical cooperation between Russia and Africa have any broader implications for regional security dynamics, such as the fight against transnational terrorism?
The increase in military technical cooperation between Russia and Africa should expectedly have impact on regional security dynamics, particularly in the fight against transnational terrorism, which has been plaguing especially the western and central parts of Africa for about a decade now. This will, however, only happen as a result of honest, transparent, and effective implementation of the military technical cooperation agreements already signed with many African countries by Russia. This was what actually motivated me to facilitate the signing of a military technical cooperation agreement between Russia and Nigeria in August 2021, while I was still Nigeria's defense attaché to Russia. This was considering that Nigeria has borne the brunt of transnational terrorism in the past few years. I believe the more assistance Nigeria gets from every quarter of the world in defeating terrorism, the better it is for the world at large, given Nigeria's undeniable status in the world.
My final question to you, sir. Looking ahead, what do you foresee as the future trajectory of African military relations with Russia, and what key factors are likely to shape this relationship in the coming years?
I see the future trajectory of African military relations with Russia as being bright. This will, however, depend on the extent to which such relations help to improve the lot of African militaries, especially in terms of capacity building. If Russian-African military cooperations result in the development of local military industrial complexes or advancement in military technological capacities in Africa, then you can be sure that African-Russian military relations will further be on the upswing. I do not believe that any African country will be simply satisfied with being recipients of advanced military munitions without having the capacity to produce the same. So, you know, some factors need to be borne in mind as we talk about this. You know, the fact that every nation who wants to just achieve its objectives. And as it is said, in international relations, there are no permanent friends, there are only permanent interests. So without holding brief for African countries, I want to believe that emerging African leaders are simply pursuing relations that they consider best for their respective countries. One thing is clear, though. Russia has in recent times apparently made deliberate overtures to African countries, clearly projecting itself as a true friend in need. That has also been an important factor, and it will be needed in years to come.
As we conclude this episode of Global South Pole, retired Air Vice Marshal Olatokunbo Adesanya shared his insights on the growing shift in military relations in Africa towards Russia. He shed light on the significant developments that have taken place recently in the area of military cooperation between Russia and African countries. According to our guest, Russia and several African nations, including Nigeria, have been working closely militarily lately. And he emphasized that over 20 military agreements were signed between various African nations and Moscow within a period of 5 years. What is particularly remarkable is the transition away from exploitative ties and towards a more equitable partnership based on mutual benefit and shared geopolitical objectives. Moscow's commitment to creating equal partnership with African states represents a new path for these nations, pointing to a future of improved military capabilities and strategic alignment. In conclusion, Air Vice Marshal Adesanya states the path of Africa's military relations with Russia looks promising, depending on the tangible benefits accrued to the armed forces of African countries. If these collaborations pave the way for advancements in local military industries and technological capacities, the potential for further growth and cooperation is boundless. Before we wrap up today's episode, I invite you to listen to our quote of the episode. In this segment today, we feature Ambassador Arikana Chihombori Kwao, a Zimbabwean diplomat and activist who has been a vocal advocate for anti-colonialism and an end to the exploitation of African resources. She has served as the permanent representative of the African Union to the United States and has been a prominent voice on issues related to African development, self-determination, and sovereignty. Throughout her career, Ambassador Chihombori Kwao has been a fierce critic of neocolonialism and the continued exploitation of Africa's natural resources, and has worked tirelessly to promote African unity, solidarity, and economic empowerment.
To my fellow African diaspora, Africans on the continent, all people of African descent around the world, friends of Africa, and all inhabitants of our beloved Earth. Happy Africa Day. As we celebrate Africa Day, let's reflect on what our Pan-African fathers wanted to accomplish when they met in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, back in 1963. They met to discuss the possibility of an Africa that was united, an Africa that spoke with one voice, an Africa that could only defeat colonization, an Africa that could only succeed at accomplishing and winning true economic liberation through unity. Through unity, meaningful unity of purpose. Sadly, when they went to Addis Ababa, Ethiopia in 1963, they were divided. We had the Casablanca Group, who were Ghana, Guinea, Mali, Egypt, Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, who said Africa for the Africans and African unity now. Sadly, they were not the majority. The others who were the Monrovia Group, they said, let's hold off on this unity thing. Let's go slow. My fellow brothers and sisters, Africa lost when the Casablanca Group lost in 1963. They came out with a compromise agreement, which was the Organization of African Unity, which has since been renamed. Since 1963, we have been going slow, which were the wishes of the Monrovia Group. the only issue we've been able to accomplish since 1963 was the creation of the African Continental Free Trade Area, which is now seeing Africa going to the world stage as one customs union. The other wishes, which were the establishment of an African military, the establishment of a single currency, a single monetary policy, a single stock exchange, we have not been able to accomplish any of those building blocks for economic development. Let me remind you that at independence, African countries were given limited, and what I say in some cases, fake independence. But what was denied Africans was true economic liberation, because they understood in order for the Western world to continue to exploit Africa, economic liberation was to be denied Africans by any means necessary. Let me take you back in history. When the Africans were minding their own business and the invaders from the West descended upon them, they descended upon them and put in systems to see to it that Africa and her children were forever defeated and dominated, starting with slavery, then colonization, then the Berlin Conference, where they met for 4 months to come up with a policy on how to see to it that Africa and her children are forever defeated and dominated. The policies they put in place back in 1884 remain alive and well in Africa today. Those policies continue to wreak havoc in Africa today. For those of you who say, oh, Berlin Conference is a thing of the past, think again. As long as we have a country called Eswatini, as long as we have a country called Togo, as long as we have a country called Malawi, even the big ones, Nigeria, Egypt, Kenya, on their own, they simply cannot survive. And yet, the division of Africa was intentional, was deliberate, and was supposed to have specific desired outcomes. And those outcomes continue to be felt to this very day. They did not end there. When the children of Africa were taken to the Americas as slaves, what they were subjected to on slave plantations, following the quote-unquote freedom of the slaves, they followed up with Jim Crow. They followed up with redlining. They followed up with systematic imprisonment of Black people. They followed up with continued abuse and denial of economic advancement of Black people, no matter where you find us. Whether you find us in the Americas, whether you find us in the Caribbean, in South America, in Europe, and of course back in Africa. We are the working class, systematically relegated to be forever the working class. Back in Africa, in spite of having been given independence, the invisible hand remains alive and well. No matter how hard African countries try, yes, we have our own responsibilities to shoulder. But the bottom line is, after slavery, after colonization, after the Berlin Conference, then came the world geopolitics that set out to have systems in place that will see to it that forever people of African descent will never attain true economic liberation. I'm talking about the world financial systems, World Bank, IMF, the Bretton Woods institutions. I'm talking about the World Trade Organization, which has blatantly ignored abuses of Africa, because it was created and understood that Africa will forever be providing raw materials to the Western countries to the detriment of the Africans. I'm talking about the World Health Organization, which, as you saw during COVID, Africa was left hanging. I'm talking about the United Nations, an entity that is supposed to be the watchdog for human rights around the world. The three members of the five-member UN Security Council are some of the biggest abusers of human rights through slavery. Slavery, which is yet another war crime that no one is yet to be prosecuted. Colonization, which is a war crime to which no one is yet to be prosecuted. There is a need for these war crimes to be referred to the ICC. What is the United Nations doing about this situation? The watchdog for human rights violations, at the rim of it, are three countries that are the biggest perpetrators of human rights violations in the history of mankind. And by that, I'm referring to slavery. All other nations, all other races that have been wronged, the Japanese, the American Indians, the Jews, you name it, they have been compensated. Reparations have been paid. And yet, the biggest crime ever committed on any group of people through slavery, the people have never been compensated. The issue of reparations is way past due. One then looks back and says, as a people, why is it that we have failed to push back against these blatant abuses? Some of the most egregious ones, for example, the European nations that continue to refuse to retain the remains of our ancestors because they were classified as trophies of conquest. To this very day, evidence of murder, they refuse to return the remains of our ancestors for proper burial, just to give them simple human decency. United Nations sits back and watch this, and they say nothing. The artifacts, priceless artifacts, which were stolen out of Africa, they don't deny it. Oh, yes, we stole them, but we're not returning them. They're nicely displayed in their museums throughout Europe. Some are still in basements, not yet displayed. They simply refuse to give them up. Where else could this level of abuse occur except in Africa? Where else could the people also collectively fail to demand that what is right be done? It's because they defeated us where it matters the most, the mind. The mind is where they defeated us, where we have this inherent fear of those who don't look like us. My brothers and sisters, how long are we going to continue to allow those from the West, and now joined by those from the East, to continue to abuse us, to continue to exploit us? You see, you got to remember, when they invaded Africa, they invaded us as a continent. When they enslaved us as Africans. When they colonized us as Africans. When they exploit us as the continent, as individual countries. You take it to the next level. When we were taken away to the faraway lands as slaves, they enslaved us as black people. Even within the plantations, they divided us. They continue to use the rule of divide and conquer. And still, they succeed at keeping us where they want us to be through using us as groups, putting systems in place as groups. Therefore, it only makes sense that if we are to undo what they are doing, we can only succeed if we also push back as groups. Small groups, if you are in a school situation, be it a university, come together as black students and fight your issues together, united. At the workplace, a group of black people, come together, fight for your issues, for your rights, united. As countries, come together, fight as a country and push back. As regions, be it the Caribbean, South America, in Africa, come together and fight these wars at every level as groups of us black people. That is how they defeated us. That is how we are going to defeat them. I'm talking about unity of purpose. This moment, my brothers and sisters, is calling for unity of purpose. The abuse of black people around the world has got to come to an end. We can no longer continue to accept the status they put us in to be the world working class to perpetuity. I refuse to accept that. As a black woman, I refuse that. As a mother, as a grandmother, I refuse to leave this world the way it is for my children, grandchildren, and generations to come. Something must be done. And it starts with you taking that ownership, taking that responsibility to wake each other up, to educate ourselves, to understand the genesis of why we are where we are as a people. We must come together just like other races have done. Unity of purpose is what this moment is calling for. So as we reflect and celebrate Africa Day, let's make our ancestors proud. Let's pick up where they left when they fought the wars of resistance and resisted occupation, but lost because they were using bows and arrows. We have a responsibility to pick up where they left. We are the ones who brought humans into this world. The tallest pedestal belongs to us. We have given it up. It is time for us to reclaim it. Justice for all. We must come together and demand a world that is free of racism, bigotry, and hate. We must demand a world that is righteous, free, and fair. So as a united African people, we're calling upon all righteous, peace-loving members of our beautiful earth to simply demand a better world. And once again, a world that is free of racism, a world that is free of bigotry, and a world that is free of hate. But more importantly, a world that must treat Africans and her children around the world fairly. It's what the rest of you non-Africans would want. We're simply asking you to do unto us as you want done unto you. Happy Africa Day, my brothers and sisters. Let's continue to work together. Unity of purpose, and remember, no justice, no peace. This moment is calling for Africa's true economic liberation. United, we will make it to the promised land. Thank you and happy Africa Day.
Thank you for tuning in to Global South Pole. Do not forget to subscribe to our Telegram channel at Sputnik Africa, and you can listen to all episodes of Global South Pole on our website and on various platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, Castbox, Pocket Cast, Afripod, Podcast Addict, Overcast, and Google Podcast. Until next time, goodbye.